CIUT 89.5, Toronto.
Welcome to the Taylor Report, CIUT 89.5 FM. I'm Phil Taylor, and with me is Phil Conlon. So you get to it. Mike, how are you doing, Phil?
Yes, good afternoon, Phil. I'm doing fine, thanks. And,
we're going to talk to Eve Engler in just a few moments. Eve Engler is, I bet you, is preparing to organize a demonstration against the Lima Group, which is going to be meeting in Gatineau, Quebec. And they are, of course, trying to install this criminal Guaido in power. This has been a little sacred cause, one run out of Washington. The Lima Group is a particularly smelly operation in which Canada has played a big part. So we're going to talk to Eve about this matter. He's been writing on the subject of Guaido for quite a while. And then following that, we hope to have some music from Aleppo, the whole district or province of Aleppo is now free of terrorists, and there is a lot of celebrating going on in the streets of Aleppo. We have lived through quite a drama here, and every time it is a victory over the terrorist elements, the New York Times and Globe and Mail expresses great concern about refugees because they're very worried about losing their friends in Al-Qaeda. I think we're joined by Eve Engler himself. Are you there, Eve?
How's it going, Phil?
Very good. And you're up to something, I assume. This man, Guaido, who recently met the Prime Minister, is getting us, I guess, a special boost, a meeting of the Lima Group, and it's going to be in Quebec. Tell us about what you know about it and what you think Canadians ought to be saying and doing.
Yeah, on Thursday, the Lima Group representatives, the foreign ministers from the Lima Group countries, are meeting in Ottawa, or actually in Gatineau, Quebec side. And they are presumably moving forward with their coordination to try to get rid of the government that they don't like in Venezuela. And this is the third Lima Group summit that's taking place in Canada. Canada was with Peru, the two main countries that instigated the Lima Group, which is basically designed to bring together regional opposition to the Venezuelan government or to support the U.S. bid to overthrow a Nicolas Maduro government. And there are protests planned in a number of different cities across the country on the Thursday. I know in Hamilton they're doing it in front of a Liberal MP's office, and there are some in Ottawa that are planning on being at the offices, the Gatineau offices. Here in Montreal, the foreign minister is speaking on Friday at noon, so we're doing a protest, Canada out of the Lima Group protest on the next day, on the Friday. And I invite listeners to, I think there's an action in Toronto as well, invite listeners to participate.
Mm-hmm. I assume you're going to Gatineau, right? Is it Tuesday?
No, it's on Thursday. I'm probably not going to go to Gatineau because we have the demonstration here in Montreal the next day.
Mm-hmm.
But
well, tell us about when he came here, actually, almost I got the impression almost that the Toronto Star, which is on board with all this stuff, was almost surprised. They did describe him as the opposition, but the Prime Minister went out of his way to call him the interim president.
Yeah. Well, I mean, Juan Guaido's legitimacy as the president of Venezuela, or interim president, as they like to call it, has always been dubious. He mm-hmm. self-declared himself that about 13 months ago. Mm-hmm. They like to claim that 50 countries recognize that. That's still a minority of governments, and of course that would very few of those governments would have done so without the fact that this was part of a U.S.-Canadian international campaign. But Guaido's, you know, what was already dubious basis for claiming to be president of Venezuela has become even more so about a little bit more than a month ago, when the National Assembly voted in someone else to be the head of the National Assembly of Venezuela. The basis of his claim to be the president was that they said when there was, according to an article in the Venezuelan Constitution, when there was no president in place, then the head of the National Assembly became the president. Guaido lost. You know, he's no longer even the head of the National Assembly. It's obviously he's contested. He claims he still is, and is back and forth claims on this. But officially, he's no longer even head of the National Assembly, because his whole basis for being head of the National Assembly was not that he was a particularly popular, or even that his party was particularly popular. His party is a very fringe right of the Venezuelan opposition. It's a minority party that had the fourth most seats in the assembly. But what was going on was that the opposition parties had made an agreement that they would rotate the head of the National Assembly to keep cohesion among themselves, that they would just rotate who was the head of the National Assembly among themselves. And it so happened that Guaido's party became up in that rotation back in January of last year. And so he became head of the National Assembly. And so what his tour, where he went to Colombia, then he went to the World Economic Forum, then he U.S. and in Ottawa, what that was really about was to rebuild his international legitimacy after his domestic legitimacy had taken a new blow after multiple other blows in the last year or so, after their high point in January, February of last year, where everyone thought that they were going to be able to pull off this coup and whatnot. So this was really him, Ottawa setting him in the Trudeau government was really trying to reestablish his credibility. And this meeting taking place later this week is just one more step in this campaign, where basically the Trudeau government is just doubling down, saying we're not gonna back off in our effort to overthrow this government, despite whatever horrors it leads to in Venezuela, despite how openly crass the interventionism is, despite the violations of international law, on and on and on.
Yeah, it is really they do seem to be playing, whether they like it or not, a losing hand. You must have seen, I hope everybody looked at all this video material that appeared when he returned to Caracas, and he didn't get a warm reception. Matter of fact, the media here has been ignoring it, but people were shouting at him, pulling on his shirt. He was lucky to make it out of the crowd that he met at the airport.
Yeah, and government airline official right off the bat started criticizing him when he was at the customs and started calling him a traitor to the country, which I mean, you can legitimately be in opposition to the Maduro government and not believe that you want Venezuela to be sanctioned, whereas Guaido is running around the world calling on Americans to bring in even more vicious sanctions. So this is an extreme minority position inside Venezuela to say that we want the government to be overthrown no matter what. And I mean, there's some people who are prepared to support a U.S. invasion. It's probably 10% or less of the population. There's a proportion that's prepared to support draconian sanctions. It's probably 20-25% of the population or less. This is who we've aligned with. We've aligned with the Voluntad Popular Party, which is a minority within the opposition. It's the extremist elements of the opposition who've repeatedly supported the coup in 2002, pushed the Garimba protests in 2014, again in 2017. That's dozens and dozens of people were killed. The objective was just to overthrow the government no matter what, and it was designed right after the person who was defeated by Maduro in 2013, how after he conceded his defeat, that was Voluntad Popular's response, was to basically go with a, you know, aggressive street tactics to you know, say, no, we're having no relations with the government, and continuing this all or nothing kind of position. And this is what the Trudeau government is supporting. And to give you a scope of how much the Trudeau government is supporting this, when Trudeau was in Munich for the security forum a couple days ago, he had a meeting with the Austrian chancellor. Now, one of the big issues that comes out publicly, at least, I don't know for sure that behind the, you know, closed doors, but publicly comes out, is that they discuss Venezuela and the importance of, you know, proper elections in Venezuela. And, like, you know, if this is high on the agenda of Austrian-Canadian relations, if Venezuela, I mean, that's just putting it onto a whole other... And Trudeau's been doing this for, you know, over a year, right? When he meets the Japanese prime minister, same thing. At the Munich forum, talk brings up Venezuela with American officials. Lindsey Graham, the Republican senator, praises Canada's policy on Venezuela. So this is really... this is a campaign taking place at all the different levels. I mean, they have this special advisor. Canada has a special advisor to pay him a couple hundred thousand dollars a year to just lead the campaign to try to oust Maduro's government. They, you know, hired this sort of effectively like a hitman to oversee Canada's campaign. You got huge amounts of the global affairs bureaucracy working on this. You got sanctions. You got it's really almost for sure at this meeting that Trudeau was supposed to go to the Caribbean community meeting this, I guess, today and tomorrow. That now he's not going because of the Wet'suwet'en protest. Foreign Minister Champagne is almost for sure going to bring up Venezuela. It's really...
He wouldn't get to first base with them. They completely disagree with him.
Well, they've been able to split. The Americans have been able to split a little bit of the Caribbean community. I mean, one of the things they got... I just wrote a piece, published a piece about this, about Haiti just joined the Lima Group. So this is a puppet government. This is very... within Haiti, it's incredibly controversial when about 13 months ago, when Jovenel Moïse backed the Lima Group position at the Organization of American States, very controversial because the, you know, Venezuela had this subsidized oil program that was very popular, very helpful in Haiti, and Moïse was facing massive protests in large part because him and his buddies stole a bunch of this money from this Venezuela subsidized oil program. Also, Haitians, of course, view themselves as anti-imperialists. Unlike in Canada, the question of Venezuela is very controversial within Haiti, to join, to follow the Americans on this position. But Moïse has just joined the Lima Group, and this is only because his presidency is totally dependent on this other Canadian-sponsored imperialist coalition, which is the so-called core group of countries, the ambassadors that basically run Haitian affairs. And the only reason Moïse is in power is because of Canada, France, U.S., European Union, OAS core group. The some of these Caribbean countries have now, gone along, have been kind of split from what was the consensus. That was actually really the whole reason for creating the Lima Group in the first place, was because they couldn't get the condemnations of Venezuela through the Organization of American States, because so many of the Caribbean community countries were not willing to interfere in Venezuelan affairs. And that's in large part why they created the Lima Group in the first place. But they have now, with time chipping away, they have been able to get a number of the Caribbean countries to go along with their attacks against Venezuela. And Canada's been right at the center of that process of pushing those governments to follow their policy on Venezuela.
But, you know, it's interesting. They use money almost all the way, by the way. Everybody gets bought. But they are, as they pick up a few, they're also losing some. Since all this excitement with the attempt at that coup, when they took the aid down to the border and all that, and now Argentina has changed governments, and it has a government that's opposed to this business. And, of course, we have Mr. Obrador in Mexico, who refuses to be part of it. And they seem to be taking, having almost all those countries that are trying to give Venezuela a hard time, are things are becoming a little shaky. Chile, the government is very shaky. Colombia, and of course Brazil is, well, they have Bolsonaro, but they now the former leader is out of prison and throwing beginning to exert his power again somewhat. So those who had designs on Venezuela are not so sure that they have a future themselves.
No, that's for sure, and that's one of the ones where you see the incredible hypocrisy of Canadian policy, where you see, if you take a look at Colombia, you know, we hear an incredible amount about human rights violations in Venezuela, but, you know, 2019 was the record year for former FARC guerrillas. There was a peace agreement in Colombia, of course, about a year and a half or so ago, former FARC guerrillas being killed, but it was also a incredible year, between 107 and 120, I believe, is the number of social movement people, activists who were killed. So this is, you know, this is explicitly political violence. This is the UN saying this, but you know, we're aligned with Colombia in the Lima group. Same thing with, if you look at Trudeau's response to the protests in Chile against you know, the billionaire President Piñera. Trudeau, amidst, I think it was 19 people had already been killed back in October, 2 weeks into these protests against economic inequality, and Trudeau is having a phone conversation with Piñera, says nothing about the protests taking place, which, you know, he's already declared martial law, the Chilean president, and wants to talk about Venezuela with Piñera, and wants to talk about Bolivia and the purported election problems in Bolivia, which were then, you know, used to oust Evo Morales.
That's right. Canada is living with that quite comfortably.
And living that quite comfortably, and that's, you know, that Bolivia has also joined. Since that coup has now joined the Lima group. And also, I just to say, when you talk about Juan Guaido as the interim president, we also should learn a little bit from what's gone on in Bolivia, is that they present, you know, Añez as the interim president. Oh, there's a, you know, Morales has tried to steal an election, and therefore there's a need for an interim president to get on new elections. Nothing of the sort. She has gone about changing all of these policies, kicking out Cuban doctors, joining the Lima group, restarting diplomatic relations with the U.S., embassy, U.S. aid coming into the country, diplomatic relations with Israel, a whole series of you know, right-wing policies. And this is an interim president who's just supposed to be a caretaker to, you know, to pave the way for elections, which of course would be exactly what would happen if Juan Guaido were to become were successful in overthrowing Maduro. Mm-hmm. You're fully right in that there's a sort of one step forward for this Lima group. They get Bolivia, they get Haiti to join. One step back, where you've got, you know, Argentina going in a different direction. But the end of the day, what's I think important for Canadians to keep an eye on is just the aggressiveness of Canada's campaign. It's also important to highlight, you know, what's going on here. I think it's clear that Trudeau is following Trump on this. Mm-hmm. But on top of that, we should also look at some of the economic players in Canada pushing this. And you know, when Guaido was here, the same day, Brian Porter, the head of Scotiabank, published an op-ed in the National Post praising Canadian policy in Venezuela, calling on Canada, calling countries to seize Venezuelan assets and give it to the, as he puts it, the democratic movements.
And his bank will happily hold the money in the meantime.
Yeah, happily hold it. and you know, praising Canadian policy. So I think this was a, you know, this is something to know for a while, that Scotiabank has not been happy with the Venezuelan government. This goes back years, where Scotiabank entered Venezuela just before Hugo Chavez came to office, and they had plans to expand, and they never did that because it was Chavez's government was viewed as hostile to foreign multinationals, and his government His bank, Scotiabank, has bet a lot on Chile and Colombia and Mexico, and there's been a series of stories about their concerns, Scotiabank's concerns with the protests against inequality in Chile. And in one of these interviews, after writing this op-ed, Scotiabank was claiming that the protests in Chile were basically Russian sponsored.
He went that far. Suddenly, he's an authority on Russian intelligence, and he runs a bank in Canada.
So I mean, these are you know, really even the Financial Post reporter just kind of presented it in a put it forward, but then, you know, kind of mocked the claim. But it shows you, I think, a little bit of the kind of headspace of corporate Canada and the banking sector, which of course is the most powerful sector in this country. Obviously, there's a long-standing hostility by the mining sector in Canada towards the Venezuelan government, including, you know, a couple billion-dollar lawsuits that Canadian companies have had won in international tribunals against the Venezuelan government.
You know, practically every government in South America that gets busted for stealing, it always comes back to the mining companies, almost all those guys. In Peru and elsewhere, when they bust each other for stealing too much, it usually involves mining companies, and those mining companies are, I think you pointed out in your books, high proportionate Canadian owned.
Well, I think a very important point that people need to understand with hostility in the Canadian ruling class, Canadian business class to the Venezuelan government. There's particular corporate interests that were hostile to the Venezuelan government. They've, launched big international campaigns, lawsuits, whatnot. But on top of that, and probably more important, is that Canada is such a dominant player in the extraction sector in the hemisphere that any government that moves in the direction of what they refer to as resource nationalism, mm-hmm. that is a threat to the 70% of mining in Mexico that's Canadian run. Same thing in Peru. Same thing in Chile. More than half of mining. We're talking about tens of billions of dollars, tens and tens of billions of dollars in these different countries through the hemisphere. And this is something that is new, right? Like,
yes.
Until the mid-90s, there were literally no mining companies in Mexico. And then the neoliberal reforms opened all that up to outside miners, and so this is something that, you know, just as easy as it was opened up, it can be reversed, and it's a very common, one of the first things that social movements, that governments that, you know, challenging neoliberalism do, is they move to get either a greater stake in the mineral extraction or take over, nationalize the mineral extraction. And on top of that, you have a whole question of the ecological question, indigenous communities particularly, where they're saying, let's just keep it in the ground. We don't want a bigger, you know, royalty. We just want to keep this stuff in the ground. And so obviously the Canadian mining companies are very threatened by, you know, the unleashing of this type of policy. And Venezuela has you know, been part of that type of movement. It's a big threat to Canadian companies in the hemisphere.
And a great example. Yes, they all wish they had that much guts. By the way, the Scotiabank editorial, which you cited, and I believe I read it in your article, he used an odd phrase. I think he said that that Maduro is following his Cuban masters, or some such thing. They also have their eyes on Cuba.
They do have their eyes on Cuba, and that, there was one of the things that was interesting about Guaido's visit in Ottawa is that Guaido actually hit
Speak to that. That was a strange. Again, I think the Globe and Mail and the Star couldn't figure out what he was talking about. What was he talking about?
Well, I'm not exactly sure, but Guaido made a comment that basically kind of suggested that you know, Cuba can be part of the solution. on the Venezuela thing, and kind of calling for Cuba to to back away from Maduro.
Yeah, to Trudeau and to pressure Cuba to do something about Maduro.
But that elicited a real backlash from like the far right in Venezuela and from some American kind of voices where they see all this as just part of first we take Caracas, then we take Havana kind of thinking, and the Trudeau government's been kind of caught in the middle of this because the Americans brought in the Trump administration brought in the element of the Helms-Burton Act, which allows these lawsuits, even the George W. Bush government hadn't brought in, that allows these lawsuits against foreign companies for assets that were nationalized, 60 years ago. And there's, of course, a number of Canadian companies that operate in Cuba that are potentially harmed by this policy. And so the Trudeau government sort of been caught a little bit in that they're full on with the Venezuela campaign, but at the same time there are corporate interests in this country that don't want to be hit by American lawsuits. I think that there is the Cuba question is kind of an interesting one. I think some elements of the Venezuela campaign would prefer to let's just focus on Venezuela and we'll deal with Cuba later, and let's try to convince the Cuban government to be less supportive or turn on Venezuela or whatever. Uh-huh. But then there's also elements that just see this as part of a whole, as they put it, the troika of John Bolton, the troika of tyranny, which is Venezuela, Nicaragua, and Cuba, and they all got to go at once. And Canadian banks, of course, aren't very supportive of the policies in Cuba.
Yeah, I would think. We're speaking to Eve Engler. Hey, by the way, Eve, now there's two things I guess we better nail down with you. There's going to be demonstrations against the Lima Group meeting and calling for, of course, a complete change of policy, which, by the way, nobody in Parliament is that I know of. Maybe one or two voices don't agree with this supporting Lima. Remind us again, you're going to be at the one in Montreal.
Yeah, so on the Friday, the next day at noon on Friday, Canada's foreign minister is speaking to the Montreal Council on Foreign Relations. So what we've decided to do is to have a protest calling on Canada out of the Lima Group, Canada out of the Lima Group, Canada out of the core group with regards to Haiti,
very good.
On the Friday to bring that message. And there's a protest planned in Hamilton.
Yes.
I believe there's also one in Toronto, and I think a few other places across the country will be protesting on Thursday. In conjunction with a protest taking place in Gatineau, outside of the actual meeting place
I would expect it's going to be good. I think people are really fed up with this stuff. It's a matter of, even if you were on their team, somebody would say, this guy is losing traction. Maybe it's time to. It's like all those Syrian politicians used to come through when Harper was in power, and they would say, this guy is the president. And then a year later, you'd pick up the paper, and no, they got a new president. And each was more worthless than the last. But, when once people get a bead on a guy like Guaido, they pretty much figure him out. So I think that these demonstrations are going to grow. The one in Hamilton is at Main Street West, 1686 Main Street West, at the constituency office of Philomena Tassi, Trudeau's Minister of Labor, and that's going to be Thursday, 12 to 1 p.m. And you also have a book, and I have to say it hasn't fallen into my hands as yet, but is it on shelves, and what can you tell us about your book, and are you going to be coming to town to talk?
Yeah, I have a new book out called "The House of Mirrors: Justin Trudeau's Foreign Policy." It's not back from the printer yet, so it's not on the shelves.
Okay.
But I did believe it may be available now online in the ebook world. I'm going to be in Toronto on March 19th, the Thursday, March 19th, at a friend's house with
on Lowther, 60 Lowther.
Yes,
that's a good venue.
Yeah, And so it's basically a book about you know, the lies and hypocrisy of Justin Trudeau's foreign policy.
Well, I think that you, Yves Engler, are the well-established reputation as the one who knows about that. We're very grateful to talk to you, Yves, and we look forward to your coming. Maybe we could get you into the studio if the time matches. We'd like to, love to see you.
That would be great.
Okay. Thanks very much.
Thanks.
Bye-bye. That's Yves Engler. And it's House of Mirrors, I think he said. It's Trudeau's House of Mirrors. New book. It'll be out soon. You heard me begging for a copy, so I'm, you know, next time I come in, maybe we'll have that. We'll certainly be talking about it. We're going to take, I think, a break. We might have some music from the Middle East. It turns out we do. We'll play a bit of that, and Phil Conn and I are going to be talking later.